The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, Kamala Harris is set to announce her running mate later today before the pair head out on a five-day tour of America's battleground states. With just 3 months to go until the presidential election, the next few weeks remain critical for the Democrats' fight against the Republican nominee Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance. Joining me now, Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist for thejournal.ie. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Who is left in the frame for Kamala Harris?
Well, if you believe the reportage, the field of five or six candidates has now been whittled down to two, and that leaves Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. Those are the two names who are still in the mix, evidently, that she's deciding between. Of course, we could have a surprise, but I think most of the talking heads at this stage suspect, if they're willing to make a prediction, they suspect that it will be Shapiro ultimately because of the Electoral College maths and the need for the Democrats to win his home state of Pennsylvania.
Now, he's someone I've only come across in recent times in terms of looking at him in interviews and other set pieces. What's he like?
Well, he's a very popular governor. I mean, he had the fortune, good fortune of running against a far right candidate to get elected governor, but he won and he's improved his favorability rankings since. So he's very, very popular in a state, again, that's on a knife edge. So would be a big benefit. He's also a lawyer, the former attorney general of Pennsylvania, just like Harris. He's whip smart. He's very able. If he does have a weak spot potentially within the Democratic Party, it is that he is a Jewish man. He is quite pro-Israel. We know that some on the left don't like that. They don't like the Biden administration's policy. But I think that's overridden by Electoral College realities.
Now, when you say he's pro-Israel, I mean, generally speaking, America is pro-Israel, but there are caveats about Israel's behavior in Gaza and how they're treating the Palestinians. But there's no American administration is ever going to say we're abandoning Israel.
No, absolutely not. And I think it's a really important point to make, Pat, and I think especially to an Irish audience. Look, the reality is the people in the United States, although, yes, there are some Arab Americans, yes, there are some young progressives who see the conflict in the Middle East differently, who want to radically change American foreign policy there, who don't like the administration or the country being so pro-Israel. The reality is that the polls say it over and over again, the clear majority of Americans remain generally pro-Israel. And that is unlikely to change at any time in the future. And again, the issue becomes for those on the left who abhor the Biden administration's policy, who abhor even though Harris's rhetoric is a little bit different, abhor the continuation of that policy, they really need to have a consideration of, well, wait a second, what do we do? Do we stay at home? Do we vote third party? And in so doing, pave the way potentially for Donald Trump to go back to the White House. I think the vast majority will say, look, we're not getting everything we want in the Middle East. We'll continue to work for change. We'll continue to try to move minds and hearts. But at the same time, we need to vote for Harris and whoever she picks on the basis that they would be infinitely better than Trump.
Now, normally this process of vetting, and it would be their bank accounts, their tax affairs, their private affairs, if such were to exist, their social gaffes, all of those things would be investigated fairly thoroughly over a period of months. Kamala Harris hasn't had a period of months.
No, she's had to do all of that stuff at sort of light speed, which obviously isn't great because there are obviously the skeletons in the closet that you want to find out about, et cetera. But also, I think what presidents do or presidential nominees do is names get floated out there early on. And once a name gets floated out there as a potential vice presidential choice, the president or the presidential nominee and his or her team get to see how that individual reacts to the pressure. How do they comport themselves? How do they carry themselves when the glare is on them? So they get a more long-term picture of what it's going to be like to go and campaign with that person. Harris hasn't even had that. This has all been, in the past couple of weeks. So it's unprecedented in lots of ways. But I know that she has a good working relationship with Shapiro, that they get along well, that they have in many ways, they're similar personalities in many ways. So, again, that's why I think, he makes the most sense. But also, Tim Walz You know, he's pretty aggressively campaigned for the job. He wants to be vice president. He hasn't made any secret about that, and he's been out since day one. So look, he could, you know, she could still well choose him, or we could even have a surprise. Who knows? I wouldn't want to make any predictions in this year about American politics.
Now, the Van Jones, the commentator on CNN, said perhaps Josh Shapiro is the right choice, but it would be a very brave choice, because here we have a situation where you have a woman of, first of all, a woman. Secondly, a woman of color, someone who is married to a Jewish husband, and then to pick a Jewish vice president, which would mean that a Jewish man is a heartbeat away from the presidency, that would be very brave. Is that a fair kind of analysis of a conservative America?
I think that's slightly overwrought, Pat. I think that, yes, there are some people who sadly still would have an objection to having a Jewish man that close to the presidency. But I think the reality is they were never going to be voting for a Democratic Party nominee in the first place. So I don't think it's that radical a choice on her part. I mean, look, you know, the Democratic Party has moved to the left. They are both committed people on the left. You know, they, in terms of his religious background, I think we've moved on from that. Yes, there are some Americans who still harbor those doubts, but I don't think they're ever going to be ticking a box for Kamala Harris anyway.
Mm. Now, one of the other bizarre things over the weekend was the dead bear cub story buried in Central Park, or left entangled up with a rusting bicycle in Central Park by Robert Kennedy.
Yeah, this is sort of the latest in what's been kind of a cavalcade of really disturbing, you know, reports about RFK Jr. And things that he has gotten up to in the past, and with the combined effect of it, you know, and evidently this was a bear cub that he found on the road and was intending to bring home and skin it and eat it, but didn't get around to it, and then said, "Oh, I'm back in Manhattan. I need to get rid of this thing." And they put it in a park, in Central Park, and they took pictures with it and everything else. Really, really odd story and odd behavior. But the latest in the long line of these kind of revelations, the combined effect of all of this is that at the end of the day, will RFK Jr. get a few votes? Yeah, he certainly will. There are people who are cheesed off at both parties, who don't like them, who still have some nostalgia for the Kennedy name, whatever the case might be. But at the end of the day, he's going to get a very small number of votes, and arguably might not be actually that dispositive factor that some of us thought he could have been.
Okay. Now, meantime, the Democrats have tried to bring in an act that, it were to pass, would be a No Kings Act, which would counteract the effect of the Supreme Court's decision on presidential immunity for Donald Trump or for any U.S. president. But it really has no chance of getting past the starting gate.
No, it has a very difficult path to get through the United States Congress. I believe that the Speaker of the House has said it's DOA, dead on arrival, in the House, so long as the Republicans control that body. It's unlikely to go anywhere. And it is an interesting piece of legislation because the Constitution does provide that the Congress has full control over the appellate jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court. So this is something that they could do without amending the United States Constitution, which, listeners may be aware, is a document that is really resistant to being amended. First of all, you need to get two-thirds of the Congress to agree on something. And anyone who's seen American politics, they've known that the American Congress probably couldn't agree that the sky is blue on a nice day. And then not only do you have to do that, you have to also then get three-quarters of the state legislatures to go along with it. So Biden is proposing a ream of new things about the United States Supreme Court, term limits for judges, you know, all sorts of ethics codes, et cetera. Now, a lot of that would need constitutional amendments and has no chance of going anywhere. But I think Democrats may be onto a political winner here, even though much of what they're proposing is futile. But running against the Supreme Court in the next couple of months could be a very popular strategy because the court is at its lowest point in terms of public approval since the foundation of the United States of America. Mm. So making the court an enemy, I think, is a wise political strategy for Democrats.
And more revelations about Judge Clarence Thomas, that he's been on the take.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, it really boggles my mind, you know, the amount of things that that Thomas has taken, you know, from people, including people with interests, you know, who are affected, you know, a litany of behavior that effectively he just seems to think he can do whatever he wants to do. And it is absolutely extraordinary, Pat, that the nation's highest court, that there is no fundamental ethics code. And the really sad thing is that it was once expected that people who got to that level, people who were eminently qualified lawyers, brilliant judges, etc., who got to the United States Supreme Court, that they also would have, that it was expected that they would have the ethics, the integrity, all those sorts of things to stand aside if they had a conflict, not to take huge money and gifts from people. But unfortunately, now we see at least one judge on the court who fails that test, who fails that test of integrity and continues to fail it miserably. And it saddens me at a personal level, particularly because we both went to the same undergraduate college, the College of the Holy Cross. Mm-hmm. So at one stage, I was very fond and very admiring of Clarence Thomas.
Even though he had difficulty, I remember he had difficulty getting approval because of a sexual allegation against him.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, Anita Hill made an allegation of sexual harassment, and there was a protracted hearing about all of that in the United States. Even back then, was divided along lines to say, do you believe Anita or do you believe the judge? Also interesting that the chair of the Judiciary Committee back then was Senator Joe Biden, and he helped that was one of the times when he came to real national prominence in the United States.
He helped Clarence Thomas at that time, did he?
He did. He did. Yeah.
He must live to regret it now. Anyway,
I'm sure he does.
Larry, thank you very much for joining us. That's Larry Donnelly, lecturer in law at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.